So the Parshas various Rambans, attack from different angles. If you go through systematically Ramban and Vayetze, you find language, metaphysics, history, midrash, v'chule. Let's start with here, which deals with relationships. Perek Chavtet Pasuk Lamed. Okay, the Pasuk, right? Ve'ten Avan L'Rachel B'itot B'lashif, excuse me, V'vok Gamel L'Rachel. The problem in the pasuk, of course, is the gam. Pasuk should be saying Vayavo gam el Rachel. That makes sense. Vayavo gam el Rachel in addition to Leah. Vayehav gam et Rachel mi Leah. The gam, of course, is problematic. Vayehav et Rachel. Vayavo gam el Rachel. Vayehaveh. Something like that. Hiskira ketuv shegam ahav Rachel. Yoter milea. Ve'atam. Why does the pasuk have to mention this? Why does the pasuk say ve'yahavet Rachel milea? Because ve'yahaveh. Ba'avur ki ha'teva le'ahov yoter isha she'adah adam barishona. Kinyan jizkir chachamim b'nashim. Ve'inak ha'de b'idel misha sa'kli. Shabbat is trying to deal in terms of parshanut with Aleph the Gam and Bet the Rachel Milea. The claim he makes here is a bit surprising, to be honest, at least on Yudati, but he says like this. In other words, the reason the pasuk now, from his perspective, parshanut, it's some kind of chidush. Like the pasuk says this because it's not self-evident, and on the contrary, we would have thought otherwise had the pasuk not mentioned specifically. In other words, we would have thought, he thinks, that he liked Leah, or he loved Leah more than Rachel. And therefore, kamashmalan, you know, havamina, he likes Leah more than Rachel. Kamashmalan, if I have it, Rachel, mi Leah. Now, why is this so? He says normally a person, or it's natural, lehov yitra yishesh yadadam yada here, in the sense of yada hadam et chava ishto. In other words, the first one that is intimate knowledge or there's a relationship. Of husband and wife, so therefore, normally the first wife, and there was the first one that there's a sexual relationship with in the context of marriage, is the one that you normally love. Here, though, he preferred vayavo gam lerachel evet lachel gam lerachel milayah. The man's phrase shelo ki atevelo v'yater. Okay, it's now, of course, this is very surprising for the obvious reason. I think it is true today as well as in the past that it's a certainly plausible claim that your first love is different than any subsequent love. that Aisha Rishona, you know, Zivug, what Chazal talk about Zivug Rishon, as opposed to Zivug Sheni, that Eshet Nurim is different. But that's what you come and say, that you have, in other words, you love, I can't say Rechon Leah here, but you love Plonit, and then, number two, even though you love her deeply, but may not be the same as the first one. But that's in normal circumstances. Over here, presumably, the original love is Rachel. And the Ramban himself will talk about this in the next pasuk. The original love is Rachel. Only because of circumstances which were abnormal and, let's say, highly problematic, or put differently, because he was cheated, so he ended up with Rachel. So it's difficult to assume that he loves Leah more than Rachel just because chronologically he married her first. So it's true that Lemaise, she was the one that he was living with first, but the one he fell in love with first is really Rachel. Now, of course, that's the reason why eventually it's not so. But here I think we have to point out the following. His observation, whether it's convincing or not, depends to a certain degree what's the focus of the marriage. Right? If the focus is the romantic relationship, so obviously Yaakov fell in love with Rachel and not with Leah. Therefore, he loved Rachel. And the fact that he married Leah first presumably should not change the equation. So now, even if I'm willing to accept that after he married Leah for that period of time during which only she was his wife, they may have developed a relationship, and the relationship may have been significant. B'chol zot, Rachel is still in the wings. So you have to assume here either one or two things. Either Be'emet, now, of course, on the other hand, if you marry, if the relationship is not romantic, but rather it's a function of the marriage, or let me say like this, you can have a paradigm in which first you love and then you marry, which is more or less the contemporary model. You can have a model in which first you marry and then you love, which is, of course, Yitzhak Avinu. Right, like, ויהיה יצחק אוהלה ויקחת יפקה ותילו לאישה ויהווה. It's not ויהווה ותילו לאישה, it's ותילו לאישה ויהווה. Now, it's always true nowadays also that love intensifies after marriage. It doesn't matter how much you love someone before, and how romantic, and how excited, etc. It will always be better after marriage. I'm talking, of course, about a good marriage, not chas v'shalom, a failed marriage. But a good marriage will always be better. You talk to any married couple who's happily married, so they lived happily ever after. It's always, the happiness is always increases. It's no matter how much you're happy and in love on the day of your marriage, 2 years later it's much better. 10 years later it's even more so, and etc. For obvious reasons. Because the relationships intensify, because the common biographies, the common experiences increase, and so on. Probably, you have one model in which you say, first you marry, then you love. But tilo isha vayeveh. The other model, right, vayeha vayeveh vatilo isha. Now, if we take the model now. I say the contemporary model, in the circles that those present in this room, I assume, subscribe to, first you love, then you marry. Even so, if you're talking about an arranged marriage, and by the way, not only in certain other circles, and it's common in, you know, it's common in many places throughout the world, in many genders for various reasons, but if you talk about an arranged marriage, in which you don't really know the kala before, That doesn't mean there's no love afterwards. It means first you marry, then you love. You may argue, and reasonably so, maybe, that it increases the chances of problems later on. But there certainly is a possibility, I think not a possibility, more often than not, there is such a circumstance in which first you marry that, and then you love it. The love is sincere and deep, etc. Now, this is really the dilemma, what's going on here with Rachel and Leah. If Yaakov was looking for a match, which he was, right, Yitzchak sends him off, Leich, ויקרא יצחק אל יעקב, ותאמר רבקה אל יצחק, קצר בני בנות חטא, ולוקח יעקב אישה מבנות חטא, כן, בנות הארץ תמו לי חיים, ויקרא יצחק אל יעקב, ויברך אותו, ויצווה ויאמר לו, ויקרא שם בנות כנען, קום לך, פדן ארם, בית בתל אביב עמך, ויקח אישה מאישה מבנות לבן, אחי עמך, אוקיי. The goal is to find the shidduch. Now, from that perspective, and so therefore Yaakov goes to seek a marriage. Now, presumably, it could be like Yitzchak. First, we'll find someone, Laban's oldest daughter, and then we will marry her and love her. What happens, of course, is that the reverse happens. V'yikasher ha'ya kovet v'chel bat Lavan. ויגש יעקב לרחל, ויגל את הצאן, וישק יעקב לרחל, וישד קולו ויבק, ויגד יעקב לרחל, כי אחי אביה הוא, וכיבד לבקה הוא, ותרץ לתקד אביה. Now, yeah, ויהב, ונבד ליער הקוד ורחל, תאיפה תרפה את מרבי, ויהב יעקב את רחל, etc. What happens in practice is, that he doesn't only find a member of the family who he plans to marry and then to love her as his wife. But he falls in love with Rachel for whoever she is at the moment. Okay, now, had the first model, had the first paradigm happened, meaning that Yaakov had really sought simply a partner and he had, whoever he would meet would be fine. So then the first one he married, presumably, he should have loved more. And the Ramban's statement that Derech HaAdam Teva Lehov Yitra Yishar Shed HaAdam Bavishona. Now, normally, Yada Bavishona VeHav Bavishona go together. So then the statement, that's a statement that usually Zivug Rishon is a better love than Zivug Sheni. In this case, though, you have a palginan here. You have one variable of the love is to Rachel. The variable of the marriage, Leah, is the first one. So this is, now here it's far from evident that indeed he should have loved Leah more than Rachel. So here it's assumed one of two things. Either we assume Yaakov was marrying, what the Ramban is assuming that we would have thought, that he's still he really sought a marriage partner. If it was Rachel, good, but if it was Leah, also good, and therefore once he was exchanged, and now he has his first wife, so the first real relationship is with Leah. Or maybe he recognizes, or the Havamina is, that he really loved Rachel to begin with, but nevertheless, the intensity of the relationship after marriage, he still thought should override the previous love, which wasn't too established before. Either way, that's why he thinks, the Pesukim think, we would have thought that Yaakov loved Leah more than Rachel. I mean, I think the first of the two options is more reasonable. We would have thought that Yaakov sought a marriage. He sought a partner. This one, that one, less crucial. So he preferred Rachel, but once they were exchanged, Losa, I mean, what did Lavan think? That's presumably also what Lavan thought. Yaakov wanted to marry one of his daughters because he wanted a man as a shidduch. So maybe he preferred Rachel, but Zilo Kroni, because what was a Kroni was a wife. Whether it was this one or that one, less a Kroni. So therefore, we would have thought, or we would have expected he loved Leah more than Rachel. So the Pesuk Memdai is no. Now why not? Presumably the maskana is that indeed his love for Rachel is rooted in the relationship. He wasn't seeking stama wife. He really loved Rachel much more than Leah, in terms of personality. In other words, we may have had a, which is why the pasuk has to tell us this. But at the end of the day, it is not against the teva, because this teva that Rabban is talking about is true only if you're seeking a wife per se. Now, if you're seeking a particular person, you may have a relationship with her. So that's why you have. I would say let's reformulate this. What's different there is not that Yaakov is different or strange to most people. It's rather that over here the relationship and the marriage have to be separated because he married the wrong person, and the fact that he married the wrong person did not therefore disband or disrupt his relationship, and therefore it's to be expected that the same teva ha'adam to love the first love most remains true. Okay, that's point number one.
Then why did Yaakov love Rachel more?
I'm saying because I think at the end of the day he wasn't seeking stama wife. He really fell in love with her personality. He was impressed. And he felt, if you want to understand the force of personality she had, and therefore he indeed wasn't simply he will love his first wife, or he'll love his wife and Leah's first. It's rather he wants a very particular person. I think love and thought differently. And the Pesukim think we may have thought so also, but Kamashma not like that. The other interesting thing to point out here is, and we saw another example last week, and then. Once more, the Ramban over here, he is analyzing or treating the Avos in terms of normal human relationships. In other words, when the Ramban says, Hateva lo v'yotera isha, he's presumably talking about the Teva he's familiar with. He's not talking about some kind of, in other words, if you believe the Avot are superhuman, supernatural, that normal human experiences do not apply to them, the way you can read in various circles regarding the Parsha of Tanakh, then this statement is ludicrous. Because what's the point of trying to even interpret Yaakov according to the standard of what the normal human nature is? The way Chazal, what's our man saying? Normal people love the first wife most. And I'll prove it to you from Chazal. So, it's clear he's talking about normal people. First of all, because that's the people he's familiar with. Secondly, Chazal certainly spoke about the average person. He didn't speak about the Avot. He spoke about human beings in general. Nevertheless, what's Rabban saying? Chazal's observations about human nature apply to the Avot as well. And this Chazal addresses themselves to us. And the Rabban applies this to the Avot. The Rabban is assuming the Avot, their basic human experiences are the same as ours. They have the same psychology, the same emotions. They're greater people in terms of the way, the intensity, to the religious expression, the moral greatness, but they're wired the same way that we are. What makes them great is the fact that despite that, they achieve tremendous personal stature. The greatness is not that they are different. This is a motif which is consistent throughout the Ramban. Ramban does this, and to me it seems pretty basic logic as well, and a common thread in many. I emphasize this because nowadays there's been a lot of controversy about this and a lot of disagreement. If you want to take a good example, take this week's parsha. Rabban Kotler wrote a piece about the Parsha of Tanakh. It's published in Mishnas Rabbi Aaron, if I remember. He speaks there specifically that anyone who claims that Yaakov kissed Rachel out of romantic reasons, you get the phrase used like is talking shluyot, this is beginning in Tanakh, Chazal Shalom described to Yaakov any normal human romantic sentiment, etc., etc. Now, it's a position which you can defend, though I disagree with it. It is still that Ramban's position. Ramban is clear that he thinks Yaakov's nature is the sumus all of us, and once more, it's a basic point by the Ramban. So Ramban Kotel can take his position, so once more, it's his prerogative, though. You know, I would strongly disagree with it, but to claim that anyone who says like that doesn't know what he's talking about, you're not talking about some kind of Mizrachnikim or you're talking about Ramban. And this is a motif throughout Ramban's Perushim Bereshit.
Because I also was thinking, at the time of the vote, as far as I know, the issue of the Gia with like your cousin wasn't really so there. And like, imagine he was like 80 something and she was like young, so like it probably wasn't particularly romantic anyway. Meaning, the reason he was kissing her was meaning because it was somewhat romantic, but like not
like this. My personal impression is not like that. If you were, but like this. But the best of Shikulin, you're coming and saying, no, it's you're coming and saying. If I analyze the relationship, so I arrive at this. No, it's if I analyze this, the episode, these are the relationships I arrive at. Similar to what we spoke about Rivka and Yitzchak. Okay, we can argue with that, but that's not his point. His point is, you cannot treat the avod because of their greatness. Means that they're different. And that's his point. His point is not because the age gap dictates such a perspective, etc. But that's the point, just in terms of there's no Isra beside it, there's no formal Isra in the Giyah, that besides the fact that you then drift into the question of Havot Kimut Kotra Kula, but besides that, even if it's formal that also, there's a certain romantic, moral expectation as well. In other words, it's not a question of is it sifkatan in Ebenezer, Simon Chaval, the question is whether it's proper behavior or not. So it's not only the question of whether it's or not.
Just out of curiosity, how did Ravon Kotler explain away the apostate that says he kissed him?
Oh, I mean, there are many other, because of Kedusha, I forget if you look it up, you can, I don't have the book at home, I'm sorry, but you can, if you look it up, you see explanation. Besides the point, listen, no. Well, let me say something. Chazal, they talk about Esher Nishikote. And we also familiar nowadays also with the many, in other words, kissing someone is a form of self-expression. Now, you can there are many such expressions. For instance, watch Arab diplomats kissing each other. It's formal. It's a question of it's dignity and respect. You can at times it's designed to convey a relationship, but not a romantic relationship. It's a great one of, at times, it's if you want to comfort someone, to soothe, the various. I think Chazal talked about this in Shikotai, and it's certainly true that not all such kisses are necessarily romantic. A parent kissing a child, you're kissing someone who's what's with it? You have to soothe, you have to calm. I mean, he talked about Kedusha, and I don't remember the exact formulation.
Isn't romantic love like a concept of the past few hundred years? Wouldn't that have been like a very big Kiddush if Yaakov has like a romantic love for Raphael?
Okay, I'll say the following. I certainly don't think so. In other words, emphasizing romantic love as opposed to other forms of marriage may be a more recent phenomenon. But take into account two things. Aleph, we say romantic love is a recent phenomenon, what you're saying is that first you fall in love and then you marry. I hope that we don't presume, that we're not preposterous enough to assume that previous generations didn't love each other. Only we've discovered, since the 19th century, we've discovered love and romance. Maximum, what people mean by that statement is that maybe the reasons to choose a shidduch, I mean, okay, to take some of the Haredi society, made them deep relationships. It's just, you know, it's not romantic love in terms of technique of seeking a match. It doesn't mean that it's not deficient the relationship later on. Now, once more, you could say that the chances may be greater. Okay, I'm not going to get to that question at the moment, but certainly it's a viable assumption to assume that many of them have romantic love, and it's true 2,000 years ago also. That it simply knows it just happened. That's number one. Number two, I think a more basic point is, I believe at least, human nature is constant. In other words, Ein chadash tachat haShemesh k'raya l'olamin. If human nature wasn't like that, you could not read have the Greek tragedy or Shakespeare and appreciate him. We assume that our world is totally different, so you couldn't appreciate any literature written more than 50-100 years before. What's the assumption? Why do we read literature which survives the age? Why does Shakespeare survive? Because they're universal problems, and the universal, not only that they interest an Englishman and a Chinaman. They're universal because they interest people in every generation. Because they're talking about universal human dilemmas. In Lomo Shaker, if you're talking about tragedy, if you're talking about comedy, you know, the relationships are very basic. You can read Antigone and see some in contemporary reality, you can see the same dilemmas and the same problems. You can talk about Oedipus a few thousand years ago, talk about him now, and so on and so forth. And it was there, it was always there, always been. In other words, that's the same reason we can understand Tanakh, we can understand Midrashim, human nature, and it's most basic. Not the outer trappings, you know, whether you wear what kind of clothing you wear. You're talking about the most basic emotions: jealousy, love, loyalty, competition, hate. All these things, they're basically the same. In other words, you read Yitzchak and Esav, Yaakov and Esav. We can recognize the emotions because they're universal. Or let's go to Cain and Hevel, right? It's sibling rivalry from the get-go, and he's always. That's why it's legitimate to take our knowledge of human nature and project it backwards. You have to be careful that you have to be careful that's done responsibly. But at its essence, you can take human nature. I'll give you a very good example. I quote this in Tzivat Zon a few. This whole topic, I wrote a few pages in Tzivat Zon, you're welcome to read there, but I took a course with Michael Chaim Soloveitchik in Shutim. We read one of the first Shuls in Ashkenaz. It's 11th century, it's literally one of the first Shuls in Ashkenaz. The Shul was like this, that so-and-so, everybody's complaining about so-and-so's maid. Ze omer oti k'tav b'makel, v'zeh omer oti karak karnan, horned them, v'zeh omer, forget, oti gitfa, whatever. What is Reuven, what is Reuven's answer to the Beis Din? What can I do? There's nobody else to find. Good help is hard to find. Nobody else wants to be an Ozeret. And so what did Chaim comment then? Good help, in other words, human nature is constant. Good help is always hard to find. And why? Because the same basic dynamic that anyone with a little talent and ambition is not going to work in cleaning remains true then and now. And the same is true about, you read about Yosef and Mitzrayim and Potiphar. So this is the human nature remains constant. That's why you can appreciate it. The more basic it is, the more it's constant. So obviously people love, though, in other words, the male-female relationship in its various manifestations, romantic and not only romantic, is throughout the ages. It's almost sure if you're talking about the romantic element, if you talk about the seductive element, you talk about the aggressive element, they are there throughout, because that's how human beings were created. You know, whatever psukim you take from Bereshit, if you talk about you know, the Torayam Esel is a kinegda, or whatever psukim you call from Bereshit. The difference between, now, for example, why does the Rav constantly analyze human nature through Bereshit? Because it's constant. Now, in his case, he believes that Bereshit also is the blueprint. But the fact of the matter is, it's constant. That's why the Havdalah can be Greek tragedy and literature throughout. And that's why these problems are always there. So yes, I believe there's romantic love then also. I'm not saying it was every case. Now, it did not always dictate marriage. But that Yaakov loved Rachel romantically, I don't see any reason why to doubt that. It's not, you know, it's basic emotion, not a recent invention. Manifestations, social conventions, maybe recent inventions. But,
I'm not sure if this would be a technical issue, but in the answer is the Ramban saying that the Lashon of Gam, you know, Gamileya, is saying that the Pasuk would have thought that Yaakov would have loved Rachel less, but the Chiddush is that he loved her the same, or that he would have loved her the same, the Chiddush that he loved her more.
Yeah, I did this one second. If they have Gamel Rachel, they have Gamet Rachel Mileah. If I'm not mistaken, I'm not sure about saying this, but the word Gam here has a dual meaning. They have Gamel Rachel means also the way Gam usually, like the normal meaning of the word Gam. But you have Gamet Rachel means not also, but more or in addition. It means here, additionally, not also, but additionally means more. Because Vayehav Gamet Rachel means Yoter. Vayehav it Yoter et Rachel Mileya. That's I think what he says here. It means Yaakov Ahav Rachel Mileya. So Kederach Arvitz is it Tam Gam? I think meaning Tam Gam in the sense of more. I'm not sure he means this, but that's what I think. That's what I think the upshot of his perush. Okay, let's move on to the next line here. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Kisnu Alea. Okay, Vayar Hashem Kisnu Alea. Vayftachat Rachma V'Rachel Akara. Okay, now, there's a problem here. The problem, or let's say this, there's certainly an issue here which requires some thought. The Pesukim basically state that Yaakov hated Leah. Like, Vayar Hashem, ki snu'a Leah. Okay, Vayar Hashem is good because Rachel knew, he recognized. So it means Yaakov hates Leah. So, okay, the question is this so, and then what does this say about both about the relationships, but also morally? You know, is it legitimate for Yaakov to, you know, is it legitimate to hate a person? So let's take a man kisnu alea, hinei lea rimta beachota, gam biyaakov. Kim nomar shnagak kavod beviya shechaz yichsay lav al tamer bo hayalo lehagid olirmoz kihilaya av kitami dekeret kol laila fikach dekeret shirah otav aboker v'lachein tzna Yaakov. Now we have here a murky situation, or either way things will not be simple. Either Leia behaved properly, then Yaakov was really, then we should condemn Yaakov for hating her. Or Leah's behavior was wrong, and then we can justify Yaakov's hating her. But then, now because both Leah and Yaakov are revered figures, we are in a bit of a problem here. So the man is trying here, he's basically walking here between the drafts to figure out what to do. He's like this. Kisnu'a Leah. Leah was in the wrong. Leah behaved improperly. Why? Because she deceived Yaakov. Now, She deceived him the most. Let me be clear. Who you marry is the most basic decision making in your life. Or if you want, maybe besides the question of, you know, emunah or not. But assuming emunah is, you know, it's not a question of decision, it's a question also of, you know, that the basic person is already educated. The most basic decision you make in your life is your marriage. More than your career, more than where you live, more than many other such decisions. So for most people, for the average person, this is the most decision important of his life, the most important decision of his life. Leah, you know, it determines everything. Who you live with, who's your partner, who you'll be buried next to, who's the mother of your children, who's the grandmother of your grandchildren. It determines everything. It's a crucial decision. Now, and Leah deceives her on this most basic decision, and she knows he wants her for her sister. Of course, it's also, she's also not being, she's being disloyal towards Rivka, towards Rachel as well. Maybe we'll say, maybe I'm in Lamed Zchut, that she felt she had no choice because of her father's will and her father's decree. Kim nomar shenagak kavod be'avia sheachad v'chisai lav al tamir bo. The Leah refused to rebel against Lavan. So I'm going to add av apichein. You know, kibud av has certain limits. But in any case, the Rambam is going to justify her by her behavior towards Lavan. Nevertheless, he says, she was still wrong. Hayala lehagid alirmoz. She could have gone along with Lavan's scheme and still made sure to indicate to Yaakov in some form or another who she was. In other words, it was possible that at the end of the day, Lavan has to leave them alone. She could have, in some stage or another, and even before the end of the day, she could have indicated... להגיד על ירמוס כי היא לאה אף כי אתה מתנקרת כל הלילה. אף here means, it doesn't mean even though, it means but, or however, she the whole evening she concealed herself from Yaakov, or she deceived him. So therefore Yaakov, now this is the root of Yaakov's sina, so she deceived him and did not indicate who she was when Lavan could have intervened. Lefichach sna'a Yaakov.
But surely, had Yaakov, one would have thought, had Yaakov had any indication whatsoever that it wasn't Rachel, he would have called her, he would have stopped the whole thing immediately.
Okay,
So I'm saying, so. If the whole point of the Rachel...
But Jabban's point is that that's what should have happened. The moral thing would have been to call it off. I, Leah, felt... So then it wouldn't have been her, it would have been Yaakov calling it off.
Yeah, although it does sort of fly in the face of the whole thing that, you know, Rachel was ecstatic, but she gave the signs away to Leah, who would have been so embarrassed otherwise.
Well, it flies in the face of Rachel's issues, but in terms of Yaakov's relationship, you know, it's... The Rachel was willing to go along, but that still doesn't justify Leah's behavior towards Yaakov.
What? When it describes Leah's eyes as being
Rakot, I don't remember. I'm sure he does.
I think it's just the way they describe the cows in Paro's dream.
The Sabbath doesn't mean...
And
in Bayeva, Lach it's a problematic word, but Ramban here, I don't think he mentions it. It doesn't matter, for this purpose, the Lomashaneh, this purpose, Leah should not have gone along. Therefore, the Ramban is basically seeking to explain to us why Yaakov hates her. Now, let's talk this. He doesn't say this, but I assume. So, first, let's try to explain why. I assume also he considers it justified. that now, this of course now plays the onus upon Leah. So why did she do this? Ve'elokim yodea ki linasela tzadik astake. The problem here is, if Yaakov was right, So why is the Kadosh Baruch Hu so impressed by Vayar Hashem Ki Yisnu Aleiah? If the Kadosh Baruch Hu was so impressed, so Yaakov wasn't apparently right. Yaakov wasn't justified. So it's like this. Yaakov was justified, but Kadosh Baruch Hu rachmanus on her. Why? Because even though she was wrong, she did it. In other words, her motives were the motivation was proper. She was desperate. She desired to marry a tzaddik. So even though she was wrong, but her motives were pure. Her desire was from tzidkut and not from. It's not because she was dishonest. Basically, she overset the boundaries because she wanted to marry a tzaddik. So therefore, the Kadosh Baruch Hu applied rachmanut. So therefore, essentially, the snua leah's dvarim kipshutan. She indeed hated her. Now, he was justified because Baruch Hu had rachmanas on her. If you want to see an interesting passage, the Netziv in the end of Bamidbar Perek Lamed Hey and the dvarim perek talis, something like that, he talks to her about sinners. And he said, like, he talks about we cause machrivei Yerushalayim, those who basically cause the destruction of Yerushalayim because they use violence. And like chavay Yerushalayim because of shichud damim. So it says as follows that Bais Rishon was destroyed because shichud damim beisur, because the chet shichud damim. Because it's plain simple violence. By Sheni, because the Shvichas Dami Baras had to mean political violence or religious violence. He says, by Sheni, because of the factions in Am Yisrael, so they applied violence against each other, and they justified it because he's a Tzduki, he's a this, he's a that. So the Ramat says like this, the Ramat says, De Machrivei Yerushalayim. Those who apply violence to their enemies, to their ideological opponents, are machrivei Yerushalayim, even if the opponents are the wrong. But he says, nevertheless, in terms of the kapara, there's a big difference. In terms of the chet, both of them destroy Yerushalayim. In terms of the kapara, because Baruch is more forgiving, if the motivation is pure, even if it's misguided and it's criminal and it's machrivei Yerushalayim, but then it turns out because Baruch is then willingness to forgive, so there's more. He's willing to recognize it does change the religious and moral calculus. Okay, b'chol ofen, to go back now to Rachel, so to Leah, v'chem aleha. Now, this is it begins here. The question of Yaakov, justifying Yaakov or justifying Leah. Now, this also is a vital point for understanding all the rest of the episodes between Yaakov, Rachel, and Leah. Because determining the relationship, you know, whether Yaakov hates her or not, is crucial for analyzing later on some of the other stories, the Dudaim, and the story words, the Bnei Yaakov, the Bnei Rachel and Bnei Leah down the road. In other words, all of the dynamics in Yaakov and his household later on. You know, if your starting point is that he was basically a household which was rooted, or basically the founding sentiment was one of hatred, it reverberates them throughout Sefer Bereishit in one way. If you assume that's not really hatred, it's a whole different dynamic of the relationships later on. Now Ramban here says it was hatred, sina. Now, to justify this, the Kachru Beshid Rabba, he quotes the Medrash now to point out that the Medrash also thinks that we're talking about Sinab Shadokim Hashmo. Kevan Shira Yaakov Ma'asim Shevim Tal Yabachota Natan the Tolu Gersha. According to the Medrash, Yaakov planned a divorcing Leah. The Kevan Shakashu Banim Amar Liman Shalim Garesh. So the Medrash is like this. Yaakov originally planned to divorce Leah. Why? Because she deceived him. after Leah gave birth, so then he changed his mind. If we have time, we'll get back to this. It's a fascinating comment. But anyway, the point here at the moment is the Ramban thinks Yaakov indeed did not get along with Leah whatsoever. There was no relationship. Or if there was a relationship, it was one of hatred and anger because of what she did to him. And the Medrash proves this because he wants to divorce her. V'zetam v'yere Elokim. V'yere Elokim, meaning, because Rosh took it to heart, so to speak. He, ki chama le'a shelo ya'azven. Okay, v'yeshomrim, Merdak, ki shtayim nashim, she'achat ahuva me'od, tikre ha'shniya snua kenegda. In other words, that kisnua le'a means it's relative, or even more so, means she's less loved. Kisnua le'a, he loves her less. Does he love her? Yes. He loves her less than Rachel. It's all relative. Now, the way that Radak has it, Yaakov loves Leah. The way Ramban has it, Yaakov hates Leah. It's a huge difference. So before, it transforms your whole understanding of the story either way. That's, of course, this goes back to, or goes forward from the Dvarim, right? And with it, you can certainly interpret as being only relative. That's what Radak is apparently basing himself upon. Kmo she'amar v'yehav gam et Rachel mile'a, meaning he loves both of them. We say v'yeh, he loves her more than her, meaning it's relative. V'yehav gam et Rachel mile'a lo she'sne'a. If that's the case, was it because Rahu gets so? Why is it because Rahu's so now worked up about? Why is he? Vaytabo shabadavar. Even though Yaakov loved Leah, but for Leah, in terms of her self-image, and I think busha means only she's embarrassed or humiliated. It means her self-image was destroyed. It's because Rahu had rechmanas, nevertheless, vaytabo shabadavar. So we have here two polar opposites in terms of Leah's status in Yaakov's household. Is she loved, but less? Now, let's emphasize, in a marriage, to be loved less is a very problematic position. It's bad enough when you have children and you have one favorite over the other. It's even worse, though, with children, at the very least, the relationship is not supposed to be mutually exclusive. By wives, it's even worse. But in both cases, of course, if you just think about how a child would feel if he knew that he was less loved than his siblings, you can imagine how Leah feels. So it's quite easy to understand why, because Baruch Hu has Rachmanut on her nevertheless. But it sure makes a big difference with Yaakov is literally... whether he really despises Leah or he appreciates her, but less than Rachel. It makes a very big difference.
Right. Well, it seems strange because he still clearly has a lot of marital relations with her. She has children. So, as in, what's the extent of his hatred then if he continues?
No, because he has an obligation. I mean, I think, well, it's like this. On the one hand, you're right regarding. Maybe I'll use this to telegraphically make a final point. One thing you're right, the Radak's position is supported by this, that Nevelis Yaakov obviously is living with her as well. Now, I can tell you there's an obligation. As long as he doesn't divorce her, he's obligated towards her. Now, we can begin to discuss the Marina Darim whether the one talks to you about that a person should not have relations with Bnei Snua. But let's say like this, he has an obligation, so I can explain that. I do agree with you that this is, if you want, better in terms of Radak's claim. The real point, though, I think, is the following. What happens, and this is now already really post-Ramban, I'll just say this quickly. there's essentially a person has a dual relationship with his wife under optimal conditions. One, there's the issues, there's the issues and there's the bais. But put differently, there's the relation, there's the eye down, the love between two equals, companions. And then there's also, there's the bais, the family, the household. You establish a family. In other words, put differently, Rashi says, Ramban says, basar chad means husband and wife. Rashi says, through the child. Now, partially, Rashi is trying to explain there literally in that the genetics are united only in the child. Only the child has the physical characteristics of both husband and wife. But there's a much deeper point, which is that every couple are also, in other words, what you have in common with your wife is she's the mother of your children and you are the father of her children. So you have in common, A, the love, the romantic love, B, the common goal of raising children, or the family. Now, the tragedy of Rachel and Leah is, and this really is in a nutshell, the whole story of the Dudaim, the tragedy of Rachel and Leah is exactly this. Leah becomes the mother of Yaakov's children, and that's the relationship. Rachel is the romantic love, but not the mother of children. Rachel has no children. Leah doesn't have a relationship with Yaakov except for the being. That's the Medrash. Le'iman she'el imagaresh. Before she gives birth, there's a romantic relationship with Rachel and none with Leah. Because Baruch Hu Dez is, Leah gives birth. So now, Rachel is the romantic wife, but not the mother. Leah is the mother, and that creates a husband-wife relationship. So Leah now is the mother, but there's no romantic love. So there's a tragic, and a deeply tragic, split there between the two roles. Chazal make the split by lemech, but there is by design. Echad yofi, echad tashmish. Or you have the same problem by Michal bat Shaul later on. That he loves her, there's a very close relationship between Michal and David, but she doesn't give birth. Now here, so now what happens? What happens is, so now she's not snua anymore, because now Yaakov has in common with Leah the parenthood. They're joint parents. They're not. So that's what means to the Dudaim. By the Dudaim, Rachel is what's Rachel trying to do? She's trying to buy the love of children. She's basically trying to buy the love. What Leah is, the story of the Dudaim begins that Leah receives love from her children. She receives a token of love. Like a kid who brings home something from school to give to his mother. Rachel wants, Rachel's trying to buy the love of a child. And Leah is trying to swap it to the love of a husband. And what happens there is that Rachel is seeking the child's love to purchase, essentially. And Leah is seeking to purchase the love of a husband. The tragedy, of course, is it can be done. I mean, just think of the phrase, Eli Tavoki Sechor Schartiha, right? Sechor Schartiha is usually used in very specific contexts, which don't have to do much with romantic love. So that's a tragedy. Each one is trying to buy what can't be purchased by money. And that's what remains basically very tragic. That Rachel can't get this, and I can't get that, and that's why there's a deep structural flaw in Yaakov's household, which is never resolved. And felt in the Bereshit, you pay the price of this. But that's at the deeper level what the Midrash is trying to say. Imach Elim Garesh, so she stays on board as the mother, and it's the same problem with Elkanah, by the way, if you remember, right? Lonuchi Tovach Mesar Banim, which is extremely insensitive because Hannah knows that she has the love of a husband. What she wants is the love of a child. And the love of a husband can never replace the love of a child. That's exactly the same problem over there. And it's amazing. B'cholofen, whether Leah is snua or not. Now, if of course, according to Ramban's interpretation, that Leah is snua, the desperation of the Judaim is much greater. Okay, but that, anyway, you have your two opinions, whether or not Leah is snua or simply less loved.
So when Rachel does eventually give birth, how come Yaakov stays with Leah? I mean, himself.
When Leah stays with Leah?
What?
She dies then.
No, when Rachel gives birth to the first child, to Yosef, right?
Oh, because she's already the mother, she has six children already, you know. I think there's six kids already, you know, it's, it's enough. So, okay, yeah.
Whoever has the newest laptop,
yeah.
Play Frisbee with it.
Nice!
Completely different game. We're going to
take your face and we're
going to
bash it with a large hammer.
Oh,
nice.
The last line of my notes is...